What's up, everyone, and welcome back to Metalcore Nerds, the podcast that combines the worlds of pop culture and heavy music. I am your host, Sean Mott, and this is the Hawkeye After Show. The After Shows are back. It's been a while since we've had a true MCU series. We had What If, but that wasn't really an episodic series per se. We talked about it. We didn't have a full After Show, but we're back with the After Shows. And joining me for the next couple weeks is Austin from the band The Undertaking. How are you doing, my man?
What's going on, Sean? I'm doing very well, and I'm stoked to be have some Marvel shows again. It's exciting.
Yes. We've been insanely spoiled this year with Marvel content, and it's weird to say, like, oh man, we finally got a Marvel show back, because this is the fifth one this year or something, right? Fifth? Yeah, fifth. WandaVision kind of bleeded in from last year to this year, but it's been a lot.
WandaVision, Loki,
Falcon What If. Soldier.
Okay, I forgot about that one. Yeah,
this is the first one. Five series and four movies in 1 year.
Whew. Oh, it's too much. I'm
not
like
slowing
a little
down
disappointed.
Either.
I know, I'm a little disappointed to find out that this series is only six episodes, but
I know
it leads us straight into Boba Fett. So I'm really excited about the rest of this year.
It's crazy because we have this, and in right before the finale, we get Spider-Man No Way Home. And then right after that's the finale of this, and then right after that is Book of Boba Fett. Insane.
Yeah, we got a good little run for us coming up.
Yeah, that's an understatement. Before we get into a little Hawkeye, we're going to talk a few other things of what's going on with us and maybe things we've watched in the past week. But I hope everyone had a good Thanksgiving or however you chose to celebrate. I hope you had a good time with family, ate lots of food. I know I did. And if you are new to Metalcore Nerds, please, wherever you're watching, listening to us, subscribe, leave a review, you know, hit the like button wherever you are. Just do that. It helps the podcast grow a lot of bit. I'm working on to try to get to that level where you can get early access to some of these shows so I can do kind of non-spoiler reviews before they come out and everything like that. So that stuff all helps me to get to that level. I've been able to get to add some press lists, which is like a step in the right direction, but you need a certain amount of kind of listenership and stuff to get that early access stuff. So that's my immediate goal, is to get into that level. So if you are new, or if you're returning and you haven't left a review on Apple Podcasts, or you haven't even subscribed and you just find it on Apple Podcasts every week, do that stuff. It helps. Believe me, it's free. It's easy. Just do it. But yes, I want to go in before the holiday season is going along. We're in the fast track to Christmas. I want to know, have you been watching anything that's festive or not festive lately? What have you been watching?
I was on a movie heater a while back, so we haven't talked too much, but 3 weeks in a row, I saw Dune, Last Night in Soho, and Eternals. So three Thursday nights in a row, and that was just like a good treat because we hadn't been to the movies a ton, and going to Thursday night, like opening showings is a huge thing for me. So three movies in a row that were super dope. I think you've covered, I don't know if you guys talked about Last Night in Soho here, but that was pretty cool.
I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, it's super wild. And it's very different than anything that Edgar Wright has done. But then after the movie, It totally makes sense what he was trying to do. And I think I loved it.
I'm very excited for that movie, and so is Sam. It's just we didn't have time to go. It wasn't in the theaters very long. It came out when we were on vacation, and then pretty much when we got back, Eternals was out. We saw Dune right before we left for vacation, so it was like there was like no time to go see it, which I was bummed about. But we're definitely gonna like rent it at home, which isn't the same, but I definitely think it's a movie. Still seeing it at home will be okay. It'll be fine. I love Edgar Wright, so I figured it'd be a very awesome movie, and I'm interested to see how it'll make my top 10. So my top 10's been new movies have been coming in and kicking shit out lately, so I'm interested to see where it ends up being by the end. I actually just saw my mom stayed a few days after Thanksgiving, and we went and saw Ghostbusters Afterlife Friday. And man, that movie was a complete surprise. It was a delight. It was so, so good. And like,
I gotta check it out. I haven't seen it.
It's very good. Especially if you, I would highly recommend watching the first Ghostbusters before, And then that's what we did. We watched that in the morning. Then we went and saw the newer one. But it stands well on its own. And it does a good job of continuing the legacy of Ghostbusters in like a really, really good way. So
if you were drawn towards Carrie Coon's character and maybe wanted to see more of Carrie Coon, it would be a great opportunity for you to watch The Leftovers, by the way.
I knew she was from The Leftovers. I knew you were going to bring this up. I've been stuck in like a weird series thing where like I've been trying to watch all the new stuff that comes out.
Yeah.
So yep. After I finally finished The Sopranos, which was a journey that I very much enjoyed, I'm trying to think what else I was watching when I did it. But I'm in the middle of Midnight Mass right now, which is really cool.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone's, you got to tell everyone me says the ending is crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm on episode 6, I think. Like the stuff just happened with Riley, not to give anything away for everyone that hasn't watched. Scene Riley happened. That's very vague enough where no one will know what I'm talking about. But yeah, so it's getting crazy. I know people said it was a slow burn, and I can get why people say that, but some pretty wild stuff happens in the beginning too that makes it not as slow as people made it seem out to be. They're like, oh, it's like a really slow burn. And I was like, I get it, but I was like, some wild shit happens right in the beginning. So, but I heard the ending is like bonkers, like batshit crazy. So I'm excited to get to the end of that one.
It goes off the rails in like the best way. So that's exciting for you. Cool.
that's my favorite kind of thing. We're just like completely gone off the rails. I like that. I'm trying to think.
I'm currently in Succession. I'm a huge Succession guy. So watching that.
That's one I need to start watching too. Haven't watched it.
It's kind of next level. Everyone, right? Every character is the worst, but. It's quite a ride.
I love that. I love when every character is the worst. Honestly, that's how Sopranos was. Like everyone in that show sucks. They're all terrible human beings, but you like them still. It's so weird. It's such a weird thing when they make obviously unlikable characters and they make you like them still. I don't know how they do it, but they do it. It's crazy. So that one, I will watch Leftovers because I love shows that are just nothing but dread and depression. So. Seems right up my alley. Seems right up my alley. I do need to talk about, I've probably watched, I had like the worst stretch of watching movies. So the other day we just had some friends while we were hanging out. Sam's like, oh, let's just watch a movie. And you know, like we're not like fully watching the movie, but we're hanging out and the movie's in the background. And I went on Disney Plus just to see like, oh, what holiday movies they got on here. And I found out there's a Jingle All the Way 2. And I'm just going to say, guess who stars in it? You'll never, unless you already know. But if you don't know, a lot of people had no idea there was a Jingle All the Way too, including me until I saw it.
I'm going to guess that that was like, I'm going to guess that that was like Sinbad. He like tried to make that thing happen.
No, it was in like the 2000s this came out. It might've been the 2010s. I can't remember.
I have no idea.
Larry the Cable Guy starred in this movie.
Oh no.
Larry the Cable Guy. That's yeah. Oh, good. No is correct. There's no Turbo Man. There's a bear in it. It was pretty bad. It's a pretty bad movie, but nothing in comparison to the movie that. So for Thanksgiving, we had a bunch of friends and family over that don't really have family around here. So we had all of them come over and, you know, spend Thanksgiving with us. It was really, really nice. And at the end of the night, when like half of us were still left, my friend's like, oh, I brought over this movie, Thanksgiving. We need to watch it. It is literally the worst movie I've ever seen in my life. Like, no joke.
Is it a recent movie?
It came out in 2009, so not that recent. Okay. But it is by far the worst movie I've ever seen in my life. It's about
Okay, go ahead.
No, I want to hear what you said. What are you thinking?
My initial response is that somebody watched Grindhouse and watched like the fake trailers in between the two movies. And one of them is like a turkey horror film. And I feel like they like went and they're like, that's actually a good idea. And they like tried to make that themselves.
That's probably really accurate. Because it is basically they went back to the first Thanksgiving and the title screen said tits in the first 1 second of the movie. That's like the selling point of this movie. Okay. And it's this woman pilgrim from the first Thanksgiving that just has her boobs out. There's like no reason. It's not even like a sex scene, like nothing. Just a woman pilgrim with her boobs out. Literally made sense. She gets killed by this possessed turkey that somehow gets trapped and then gets unearthed and goes out and starts killing people. And
It's this
terrible puppet turkey. Looks so bad. the worst you can imagine it looking, it probably looks worse than that. And it talks and it has like Freddy Krueger one-liners and acting. I don't want to hear anyone say there's bad acting in like a major movie ever again, because you can go watch this movie and it makes any movie pretty much ever look like an Oscar-winning performance. It is the worst acting I've ever seen in my life. It makes zero sense, which, I mean, it's called Thanksgiving killing. It's not supposed to make sense, but it was terrible. Like, we're watching, we're like, Joe, like, what are you doing, man? Like, why did you make us watch this? This is not good.
There's three of them?
I guess, yeah. I don't know how, but there is.
I love it. Oh, my gosh. That bums me out, though, because obviously I want, like, the movie to be, like, fun bad, but this doesn't sound like it was that at all.
It was so bad it couldn't be fun.
That makes sense. That's just painful because there's so much that you want to be watching and you waste time with something like that. It's like just a disappointment.
It was only an hour long, so we're like, even if it's bad, it's an hour long. It was the longest hour of my life. Like, I was like, I can't believe that was only an hour. It felt like three.
Real quick, because this is metalcore, I'm going to combine what have you been watching lately. I've gone to two shows recently that were amazing. Yeah. I got to see Every Time I Die do the 10-year Violent Gentlemen show, and it was the rowdiest show I've ever been to. And
I love that.
Like, it was so cool. Like, transcendent show environment outside in this tiny amphitheater, and the whole time from the first song, the whole hour, everybody just was moving the entire time. And then we're recording this on a Sunday morning. Saturday night, last night, I saw Silent Planet's album release show up in Glasshouse in Pomona. And it was Phineas, Dayseeker, Hail the Sun, and Silent Planet. And Scary Pool Party was like the secret opener, and just a really, really, really cool show. So two shows in a row that were like one-off kind of celebrations that were awesome.
That's very, very sick. Lately, I went to that the CU Space Cowboy, Vatican, Wrist Meets Razor, Grey Haven tour. Came through, and Sam and I went to that, and that was very, very dope. I'm friends with most of the bands that were on it, so it was cool seeing a bunch of people who I haven't seen in, you know, at least 3 years. So it was cool to get to hang out with people, and I mean, I love all four of those bands. So, and I've never seen CU Space Cowboy or Wrist Meets Razor, so it was cool to see them.
Dope.
And I haven't seen Vatican since they're a new shit, obviously.
Yeah, they played Chain Reaction, and that was like on a it was like a Thursday night. It was the first show of their tour, and I almost went, and it sold out. But it was going to be hard for me to get to that show, anyways. But I don't know. You just the scene right now. You just need everybody to go to every show so we can like keep the industry going.
Yeah, shows have been doing pretty well, which is very cool. It's cool to see all these different tours coming out of COVID and everything, like very mixed bills, and I'm a fan of that. I'm very into that. So we bought tickets for like Turnstile next year, and we're seeing Stick to Your Guns in a few weeks in Albany with End and a few other bands, which is going to be really, really cool. It's a super small venue, so that's going to be sick. What else? I think we're probably gonna buy tickets to that Under Oath Every Time I Die Spirit Box tour, probably too.
I got tickets to that. Yep.
Hell yeah.
It's exciting.
That's what's so cool. Yeah, like I said, there's so many cool tours coming out. It's like hard to keep up with it, but it's exciting. Like, I mean, we're going to Worcester for the Turnstile one. If we go to that Under Oath tour, we have to go to Boston to go, but Sam has her uncle lives in like right outside of Boston, so it's easy for us to go out there, and just like we have a place to stay and we get to hang out with them, so it makes it a lot easier. So it's good, and if we want, we can bring the dogs and they can stay there while we're gone and everything, so it makes things a lot easier to do that kind of stuff, which is nice. And Boston isn't that far away from us. It's only a 2.5 hours, so it's not even crazy drive to do. All right, we used to live like an hour further away, but where we live now, it's a lot easier. And when we go to Albany, it's only an hour and a half away, so It's another easy drive. Easy. There and back. Go back and one. It's easy. It's easy. But let's get into some Hawkeye stuff. I'm gonna give a primer for anyone who doesn't know. I'm sure most people listening to this are kind of way in tune with this just as we are. So the Hawkeye series is going to be loosely based on the Matt Fraction, David Aja run, which if you haven't read it, read it. It's amazing. I'm actually going to be doing a giveaway. I have them here. So I bought the first volume of them right here. And then they decided to come out with an omnibus that has all of the issues in it. So I bought that. So I'm going to be doing a giveaway. If you follow Mail Corners on Twitter, it's going to be on Twitter. It's going to be easy. You're just going to be able, you just have to retweet the tweet and follow the Mail Corners Twitter. That's all you're going to have to do to enter. It's going to be very easy. I have no use for these now because I own the omnibus. So I figured might as well, you know, give them away. Why not? But yes, it's loosely based on that. Matt Fraction is actually a producer on the show, like a consulting producer, which if you're familiar with the comics, it's evident and shines through in this show, which I love. And maybe a reason why I love it even more than I thought I would, probably, because I'm like fresh after reading the end of that run. And like this run feels so much like it. And it's totally different ways, because in the run, Clint is divorced and he's like has drinking problems. And there's a bunch of shit he's dealing with. And he's already met Kate Bishop. They're already kind of partners. And he lives in New York. And he actually, the reason the Tracksuit Mafia gets involved in that one is he buys the apartment building he lives in, which Kate's kind of not taking that role, but she lives in the apartment flat in New York City instead of Clint. Clint obviously has a farm in Missouri. He has a family. It's a lot different, but he's dealing with much different trauma, which we're going to get into. Everything he's gone through with the Avengers, losing his family for 5 years, becoming a murderous assassin for 5 years, and also, you know, losing Nat in Endgame on Vormir was a very, very big thing for him. But obviously, this is going to be Kate Bishop and Clint dealing with the criminal underworld of New York City, and it takes place in 2024, so it's like a year and a month or 2 months ish after the events of Avengers Endgame, which is, I believe, the farthest point we've seen in the news so far. This is like farthest we are. I think Far From Home, and maybe I can't remember. Someone just updated the timeline Disney Plus. I can't remember if Shang-Chi is after Far From Home or before it, but I know they're very close to each other, which makes sense because, you know, Captain Marvel's hair is mad long now when it was short in Endgame. So I was like, when they showed that, I was like, oh, that has to be at least like a year after Endgame. Her hair is long. No one talked about that. And I was like, her hair is long. There's got to be something.
Sean, no one's
everyone's talking about
it's got to be exact time for the hair to get that long.
Well, it wasn't like exact time. I was just like, it has to be like a while after Endgame. I was like, her hair is pretty long for it being like very short. I was like, it's got to be a while. Everyone's talking about Bruce Banner being human, which, yes, is a big deal, of course. But I was like, look at her hair. It's long. They're not just, I mean, they pay attention to detail, which I there's something in the opening scene that I want to bring up that people seem to be upset about, I guess, with continual error or whatever. But they're usually pretty good with that, besides like the Spider-Man Homecoming time jump, which was wrong, but they fixed. But, you know, they're like 30 projects in that they'll fix later. If it's wrong in one thing, you go back the next day and they've already fixed it, you know. It's like the blue jeans guy and Lauren, they edited him out like instantly, re-uploaded that to Disney Plus. People that got, and that was like the big thing on the internet. So they're on top of this stuff. They'll fix it anyway. So the show starts off in 2012, which if you're a big MCU fan, you know where we're going. Mm-hmm. So obviously this takes place during the Battle of New York, or, I mean, you would guess so if you're like, oh, 2012, they're in New York. Of course, it's the events of the Avengers. So we see Kate's parents, Derek and Eleanor, arguing over money. We don't know what they do. We know what Kate or Eleanor does in the future, but we don't really know what they're dealing with as far as their job or anything. But they have a very nice penthouse, so it's obviously they make it in New York City, so it's like they're rich. Of course, they have to be some sort of rich, and they're arguing about money. Kate is eavesdropping. She accidentally drops a truck, sends the dad up to comfort her. He does. And then he's like, I'm going to go down to my office. And then Kate talks with her mom for a little bit. And then she also goes downstairs. This is take note that she also went downstairs, because I think it's going to play an important role later on in the series. And then Kate's just in her room. You see a Chitauri ship fly by, and then shit goes wild. And the apartment starts, you know, big explosions, everything like that. A hole opens up in the side of the penthouse, and she ends up seeing, which, a cool note, they completely reshot all of the footage to, like, match what happened in the Avengers movie, which is really cool. They just didn't reuse different things. They actually recreated all of this for the show, which I love when they do that kind of stuff. It's like a great attention to detail. And I've seen some people, I'm sure you can find this on Twitter, but some people have posted videos of the same things happening simultaneously from the Avengers movies. So you see both perspectives at the same time. It's very, very cool. They made up dead on. The only thing they didn't match up, which I guess is on the Stark Tower, the K is still there. And I guess the K is the first letter gets knocked off. So some people are kind of being like, oh, maybe it's just a mistake, or maybe they're in a different universe. I don't think they're in a different universe. I think that'd be kind of weird. But I'm like, this is the thing. I'm sure they're going to fix it. And like the next time someone goes to watch it, they're like, oh, it's, they took the K off or something like that. I'm sure it was just like a weird VFX mistake. Then someone missed it when they were going over it. It happens. We're human, you know? But of course, the internet's going to find it and point it out. That's just how it is. That is just how it is. But Kate actually saved by Clint and sees Clint fight off more Chitauri and then do his patent and, you know, jump off the and do the twist and everything, which is funny because New Rockstars brought this up, is that Kate sees this as his heroic, perfect action. But in reality, it's Clint when he has no arrows left. It's like a last ditch effort. And once he does that nice swing, he's like out for the count, basically. It's like one of the, you know, it's like the low point of that battle in Avengers. And Kate is seeing it as like, oh my God, this dude is the coolest dude ever. Which, I mean, for being a normal ass dude in the world of the shit he does, the dude is a badass. Like, a lot of people shit on Hawkeye. I think it's unwarranted, in my opinion. And I'm hoping people get a new love for him after this series. But what did you think of this opening sequence so far? Because I loved it. I thought it was so cool.
Yeah. While you're talking about it, I totally just realized that the same thing happened with Batman versus Superman, where they put Bruce Wayne in Metropolis when Superman and Zod are like tearing everything apart. And I think it's like a good way of connecting those two, and just a reminder, for us, like what Hawkeye's been through. And I think that they're gonna have to do a really interesting thing, because like, I don't know if people really care about Hawkeye, because obviously he's like the least cool Avenger, and they touch on that in the musical stuff. Like, nobody cares about him. The character is in Madison Square Garden. Like, he's not even there. It's Katniss Everdeen. And I think that they're like, I love that they're pairing somebody who watched him do this cool quote unquote move and then basically change the trajectory of her career, her life based on that. And I think that's like pretty impactful. I dug it. I thought it was interesting. I think I get a little annoyed that it keeps going back to like the same stuff. And so where you're like, oh, we've seen the battle of New York. Like, sometimes I just kind of like want to move past that. But that said, if you were living in New York in 2012 during the Battle of New York, like, obviously your life changed big time.
I've seen some people compare it to like the 9/11 of the MCU. Like, you know, people are always going to kind of go back to that. It was a very traumatic event, which, I mean, there has been many at this time, but it's kind of one of the only ones that happened that was that big of a scale in a city. Because, you know, Avengers Endgame kind of was secluded at Avengers Compound, which is in the middle of nowhere. Sokovia happened in Europe. Even like the Civil War fight, it was in like a pretty much like abandoned airport. So it's like not like there was a normal people affected by it. The only thing that's the other big thing is when the first snap happened. Well, both snaps, when people were gone and people came back, which we saw in WandaVision, which was very cool to see that perspective from. I'm okay with them re-showing stuff when they give us a cool new perspective on it, especially when it's like a more human perspective. You know what I mean? It's like, of course this shit would be super hectic and crazy for a human. Like, that's why that hospital scene in WandaVision is one of my like favorite MCU moments, because it's so like anxiety driven, and like that's what it would feel like if people just started showing back up. You know, that's exactly what it would be.
You're gonna love the leftovers.
Oh, I can't.
You're
wait,
gonna
dude.
Love the leftovers. I'm gonna. You'll know what I'm talking about when you get to it. It's so good.
Yeah, yeah. I believe. I fully believe. Believe me.
I thought it was cool. I thought it was a good way of just setting the tone of what the show is going to be. And I think, I'm excited that we're following Kate. I think that that's a really smart decision, that it's actually her show.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Me too. Which I think people can get confused, because even when I was posting on the Metalcore Instagram about the show with Kate Bishop included, they're like, a girl Hawkeye. And I'm like, yeah, this isn't like a new thing. I guess in the retrospect of comics, it is newer. She like debuted in 2005 or something like that. So she is a quote unquote newer character, but it's not like it's brand new. You know, they didn't make it up just for the show. She's very established in comic lore. And then it kind of ends where Eleanor sweeps up Kate and she's asking where her dad is. And they just get out of there, and then it cuts to her funeral, or his funeral. And it kind of seems to believe that there's more than just the building collapsing that led to her death, which I think will probably be revealed later. Eleanor might have had a part in that, maybe?
Yeah, did she? I just realized that right now. Like, did she kill the husband?
I don't know. They both, like I said, remember, well, they both went down to the, they both went downstairs. Yeah. And she
I
went after
know.
Derek went down there.
I don't know anything about Eleanor. Like, is there a comic book history behind her? Because I don't know anything about her.
So this is really funny. In comics, her mom is the one who died.
Okay.
And her dad is the one who is the rich one and kind of like takes care of her and all that stuff. But he does end up being a bad guy. He ends up being in business with this character called Madame Mask, who is another like big figure in the underworld, who is a big part of the Fraction Run. And I do think Eleanor might end up being Madame Mask later on in the series. It might be revealed that she is Madame Mask, which would be like a cool amalgamation of the characters, but they kind of flip-flop the roles. And you don't get Vera Farmiga to be in the MCU to be like a one-off small character.
You took the words out of my mouth. Absolutely. Yeah. You don't cast somebody
there for
like
a reason.
That. Yeah. Somebody on Twitter, I don't think you retweeted it, but they didn't know she was in the show, and somebody likened it to finding like a $50 bill in your washed jeans. Like, not even like a dollar. It was like, oh, this is a $50 bill I just found in the wash. Like, you tune into a show and you see the cast and you're like, okay, this is like real deal, which maybe we'll talk about him later. But if you don't watch Better Call Saul, like Tony Dalton is
right?
The dopest actor. And I'm so stoked that he's in this show too.
Yeah, it's a very stacked cast, which, I mean, like, even Haley Steinfeld as Kate Bishop, that's a big get. That's not, like, a small feat. Like, that's crazy that they got Haley Steinfeld. And I will say, I only know Kate Bishop from this run and from the Avengers game, but she is the perfect Kate Bishop. Like, the perfect. Like, no one could play her better than she has been playing, just even in these two episodes. Like, she is pitch perfect.
I think that Marvel, on my notes, I just say Marvel casting machine, because I just think they do such a good job casting people. And you get Haley Stanfield, who oozes charisma, and you just let her do her thing. And then you partner her with a very underrated Jeremy Renner, who's in the Marvel movies, I guess, kind of been sidelined. But I unintentionally watched, I've been on a little Jeremy Renner run, because I watched one of the Bourne movie he's in. And you just realize, into his IMDb, and he's, like, such a good actor and has done so many cool things. And you just, like, let all these characters and actors get into the script and do their thing. And you could, like, we'll jump ahead to it, but the LARPing stuff, like, Jeremy Renner was having so much fun in that scene. And you can tell.
That scene
that's
is
really
so
exciting.
Good.
Yeah. So, anyway, what is Eleanor?
It's amazing. Yeah, she's hiding something. We'll get to more of what she's hiding, because she seems to kind of be warning Kate, but indirectly warning Kate, like, hey, you're gonna get hurt, like, stop doing what you're doing, basically.
Yeah.
Then Kate, as they're at her father's funeral, she's like, I need to protect us, and she asks for a bow and arrow, and then they have this awesome animated sequence, which is art straight ripped from the Matt Fraction run. Basically, it's very David Aja like inspired animation. You see her training in gymnastics, fencing, archery, martial arts, everything like that. You see all these medals, and her mom is overseeing everything she's doing. You know, mm-hmm. she's setting her up to take her place, I think, later on. And I'm very interested. Like, that's a big mystery of the show, is like, what's going on with the Jack Duquesne and the Eleanor Bishop of it all. The Tracksuit Mafia stuff, I'm interested to see where it goes. And we'll talk about that when we get to episode two. But I think the big mystery is that, like, Kate's immediate family, like, what's going on there more than anything. And that I kind of want to go through the Kate stuff first, because this episode was a Kate Bishop episode, the first one, totally. Mm-hmm. And then we'll kind of backtrack to the Clint stuff. So we see Kate's now 22. The opening scene after that nice little prologue is she's with her, a couple of her friends from college, and she seemingly lost a bet and has to ring this bell tower with an arrow. So she shoots out the first one, it just dings off, and then she does another one that seemingly is going to work a lot better, and it collapses the bell tower. She ruins the bell tower. And a funny note, the bell tower is called Stain Tower, which could be a nod to Obadiah Stane from Iron Man 1. Could not be. It could just be called Stain, but you know how Marvel is with their Easter eggs, so I don't know. It could be tied, it could not be. You take it as you want. After that, it seems she heads back home. They didn't really explain if she got expelled or just suspended. I guess we'll see. She talked about, Eleanor talks about her finishing college, so I'm guessing she wasn't fully expelled. And she talks about kind of paying for the bell tower, that it kind of just washes away the slate clean, because, you know, she's just, yeah, money solves everything. You
know? So she's 22. So I'd imagine having this show set at Christmas time, she's on some sort of like Christmas break.
While we're
kind of dipping into the story, that they didn't really talk about that. I don't know where her college was in reference to.
It's hard to
where she lived.
Hard to tell. Yeah, it's hard to tell or where
maybe,
she was going.
Yeah, maybe that doesn't even matter. But
it probably not. That's the thing, is we kind of look way too much into things that don't really need to be looked into.
Yeah.
If I need to remind everyone about the aerospace engineer in WandaVision, wasn't meant to be anything, guys. We just made it out to be something. So we're back at dinner. Pretty much Eleanor is kind of like, hey, come to this charity dinner. Please come to this charity dinner. You know, I just paid however much money it took to fix that bell tower. Probably a lot of money. And Kate starts to notice all these swords around everywhere. She's like, what's up with all the swords? And then in walks Tony Dalton as Jack Duquesne, which in the comics, he was known as Jacques Duquesne. They just, you know, changed the name a little bit. But he was the swordsman. And funny enough, he was actually Clint's mentor in the comics. He trained Clint to be who he was. And I don't think that's going to be the same unless they do a weird twist. But I feel like that'd be kind of, it might be a little too convoluted, but we'll see where they go with that. Like, maybe they see him and he's like, hey, I fucking know you or something. It's possible. It's definitely possible.
He is. I thought I saw somewhere that he was credited as swordsman, but he's credited as Jack Duquesne. So they're being a little coy with that.
Yeah, I think they're trying to, like, it's either just going to be a nod to the character, but obviously we find out later that he is, obviously he's obsessed with swords, and he's very proficient with swords, which we find out a little bit later. And so they go on to this dinner, and then Kate meets Jack's dad, Armand Duquesne the Third. And they have this conversation, and he reveals to her that Jack and Eleanor are engaged, which Kate didn't know. Kind of shitty, she didn't know. So Kate then confronts her mother, and she's like, oh, I'm sorry, I wanted to tell you, blah, blah, blah. It's like, you kind of probably should have told her before you went to this big party that seemingly everyone knows about it. That's just me. I don't know. Communication in the family.
Not a fashion podcast, but can we note how dope she looked in her black suit? That was like,
sure. I mean, Armand does bring that up. That's how he put the wedding. He's, hey, if we're both going to be at the wedding, like, maybe wear a dress, you don't show me up, which is a pretty funny line. And he seems very hesitant on this engagement and marriage. Seems to be very against Eleanor, which we get into a little more right after this. She wants to get some air. We see the first sighting of Lucky the pizza dog, which I love him so much. I just love him. I love dogs. So you show a dog in a show, I'm in. In the comics, Clint actually saves him from the Tracksuit Mafia. And they haven't named him Lucky yet. I'm not sure if they will, because they've changed names of pets before in the MCU, which and I know his emoji is just pizza dog. But we'll see. But there is something I do want to see in the series. There is a whole issue in the Matt Fraction run that's from the perspective of Lucky. Like, you see him, and like Kate and Clint are talking, and it's like lines where he can't understand it, and there's certain words that, you know, dogs would understand. And I hope they do a scene of just that, of it's like from the dog's perspective. I would lose my mind. I want it so bad.
I can see it now, where it's like an action scene and things are like blowing up and he's like running around and stuff. That would be pretty cool. People would lose their mind.
I want it so bad. So I hope that happens. With Matt Fraction being so attached to the show, I can see it happening. And there was a whole issue, and they kind of did this, which we'll get into with the Rogers the Musical part, but there is a whole issue where it's Clint turned off his hearing aid or lost his hearing aid, and it's all like, there's like sign language panels, and it's all just like nothing in the bubbles because he can't hear anything. And I feel like they're going to play a lot with that, which I like. I love that. So she comes back inside and sees he overhears Armand and Eleanor having a sort of disagreement. He mentions that he has powerful friends too, which, what could these powerful friends be? Could it be Val? Could it be Sharon Carter, power broker stuff? Could it be Xia Ling? Now she's the leader of the Ten Rings. Or, this is going to be my Mephisto of the series, could be Kingpin. There's a lot more alluding to Kingpin later on, even in these first two episodes. So if we don't see him, I'm not going to be mad at all. I feel like there's going to be a ton going on in the show with Eleanor, with Jack, stuff like that. But I feel like he might be at the top of this stuff. We're dealing with the criminal underworld. We're in New York. It'd be the perfect time to bring him back. So Vincent D'Onofrio even retweeted something with the series and said, this is going to be a lot of fun. That confirms nothing, but I know people are excited to see Kingpin show up back up or show up in the MCU for the first time.
You kind of feel like he's got to, and I'm trying not to get
I know. Like, I don't want to get Mephisto here, which I think if Mephisto showed up in WandaVision, it would have been very convoluted and kind of lazy to just show up at the end for no reason. But if they did it in a way like they did with He Remains / Kang and Loki, that would be very cool and like a very good payoff. He can easily show up with the criminal underworld and not overtake anything that's going on, because they're kind of already setting up that there's someone at the top. So, and there's more seeds that I'll bring up as we go along. They go down to the Kate overhears this, kind of follows Armand, and it leads her to the basement where she sees that there's a black market auction going on. And then it's revealed that the Ronin sword and suit were recovered from Avengers compound after the battle and during Endgame, and they're being auctioned off. Armand and Jack both go in a bidding war over the sword. Armand ends up winning it, but then they get to the suit, explosion comes through the wall, and it is the Tracksuit Mafia. So the Tracksuit Mafia they also call them the Tracksuit Draculas in the Matt Fraction run. They're a big part of the Matt Fraction one, which I kind of brought up a little bit earlier. Their boss in that, which I think they're going a different route in this, is just some old dude, like a normal mafia kind of thing. It's just an old dude who runs it, and he's seen in the meeting. Kingpin is also in the Matt Fraction run as well. Madam Mask, Kingpin, it's like the whole crime underworld meets together, and they want to take out Clint and eventually Kate, which is kind of what's happening here in a way, just in a different way. Actually, in the comics, they have Black Market Auction, but it's for a videotape of Clint killing some people, which I kind of theorized that they would do the same thing, but it was Ronan doing it. But it seems that they don't know that Clint is Ronan, which is pretty cool that not a lot of people really know. It's mostly just like the Avengers or anyone who's associated with the Avengers, and obviously like his wife and things like that, but it's not common knowledge who Ronan was. Probably for the best for Clint, he'd probably be in jail. Probably.
I do want to touch on that real quick. Linda Carolini, I don't know how to say her last name, like huge Cardinal fan of her from Freaks and Geeks, like adore her as an actor and stoked that she's in it. I really, really enjoyed that she knew everything that was going on with Clint.
Yes.
Where usually that would be like, the typical narrative would be the guy like hiding this from his wife and then that being the drama. Yes. But I really thought it was refreshing that she knew everything
very in tune
and knew like the plan and all this stuff. And when that happened, I was so afraid that they were going to be like, he was going to be like keeping a secret from his family, or obviously from his like kids and stuff. But I thought that that was a really good touch.
Oh yeah. I love that. And they set that up in Age of Ultron when it was revealed that he had a family, that she's very aware of what's going on, you know, which is, I totally agree with you. I actually made that note too. Like I love that she knows everything that's going on, and he, and she understands like, hey, you do need to take care of this. Like, I get it. Like, she's not like,
you got to find the suit, man.
She's just more of like, hey, yeah, you did promise you're going to be home for Christmas, so you got 5 days, make it happen. You know, like, she's not like, you know, she's not extra pissed at him. She's like, I get it. Just get it done, basically, you know. Tracksuit Mafia come in. They're looking for a watch, which they find the watch, and it's revealed that it is from Avengers Compound. I'm very interested to see what the deal with this watch is later on.
Okay, we don't know what the watch is. It. Yeah. Okay.
No idea. It could be the watch from Civil War that turned into like Stark, like it turned into part of the Iron Man suit. It's like the one where he grabs the gun when Bucky tries to shoot him in the face. Never forget that Bucky did try to shoot Tony Stark in the face. That happened.
Where did the watch end up? Wild.
I don't know. Oh no, the Tracksuit Mafia got the watch. They left with the watch.
Okay, they did, because I thought for a second the dog got the watch.
No, he was holding the watch, but I think they still got away with the watch. It was more of just Kate saving Lucky from the guy being a dickhole who kicks a dog.
Okay, so maybe the watch doesn't matter.
It might not matter. Again, this could be looking too far into what the watch means. Yep. Okay. It could mean nothing. It could just be a plot point of to how the Tracksuit Mafia got involved in this whole situation. So Kate gets the Ronin suit, puts it on. Jack ends up getting the Ronin sword, which also I didn't know it retracted like that, which is really fucking cool. I just want to add, I did not know it retracted like that. And I thought, I was like, oh, that's fucking badass. Cause you really only see it in action a few times in Endgame. And I don't know if you see it retract like that. It could, and no. I just don't remember it, but
I don't think so.
I was like, ooh, that's kind of cool. Basically Kate fights off the Tracksuit Mafia and gets out of there. And then as this is happening, we see Clint and his family at Rogers the Musical, which I must say, that song is available on iTunes and Spotify. So if you want to listen to the whole song, it's out there. It was fucking hilarious. It was so funny because that's exactly how they would do it in real life. Like, that's what it would be like. And like I was talking about the perspective of him with the hearing aid, you kind of see when Nat's, the person playing Natasha, kind of comes in, you kind of hear the ringing. And you can tell that it's revealed that he turned his hearing aid off, and you can see that the weight of her dying, and you know, he wanted to sacrifice himself instead of her. So the weight of her dying is still heavy on him, which, I mean, makes sense. It was fucked up. it's a lot to fucking handle. And his kid is kind of like, you turned your hearing off. And he's like, I know what happens, but it is really funny that there's an Ant-Man there. And he's like, that guy wasn't there, which I thought was hilarious. So funny.
Well, I love I love the casting bits, just like the different, like Loki was like kind of like a bohemian looking guy. Like, I thought that they just like nailed all the different things, like exactly what a real musical would do.
Yes. Yeah. It was hilarious. I thought it was so, so funny. And he kind of leaves, and then he goes to the bathroom, and on the urinal in graffiti, Thanos is right. Rough. And you see him looking at it, and he kind of thinks like, was he right? And that, I think that's going to be a looming question probably for years to come, especially after Eternals. No spoilers.
That's
for
what
Eternals.
I was going to say. Yeah.
But kind of seemed like he was right.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. Seemed like he helped us out more than he hurt us, which is kind of really weird to say, but it kind of does. So they kind of leave early. We do see someone trying to get a picture with him in the bathroom, which is mad weird and creepy. Don't do that to people. It's fucking weird. But you see that he's, and you see more with the dinner. The dinner scene is kind of just a brief thing. But the waiter says, hey, you saved our city. You're good. You don't need to pay for it. And you see how comfortable he is with this kind of stuff. Even like the people asking for pictures, he's like,
he got all that food because he knew they were going to pay for it.
Are you sure? Because it seems like he was very thrown off by it.
I don't know. I think because he ordered like a ton of food,
but maybe.
Right?
Yeah. They do mention, I think, like, oh, like, yeah, maybe.
I don't know. I thought when he, like, I thought he was expecting that. I could be wrong. Oh, I thought maybe. He was like, I thought he knew that they would comp his meal. So that's why he was like, yeah, I'm just going to order everything.
I can see both sides for sure. Cause it kind of seemed like he was like mad uncomfortable when he said it. He's like, what do you mean? Like, you don't, cause
I mean, thought that was,
a he good, is just so, a normal dude. You know?
Well, I like that they allowed people to know who he is. And I thought that was like a smart decision. It's like, obviously all these people, these Avengers have been on the news and are their heroes and like super famous. I thought that they played that pretty well, where going out in public, people knew who he was.
Oh yeah. They would, you know, he's a celebrity. He's like legitimately a celebrity. Like obviously people would know who he is. They leave that, they go back to the hotel room. And then as Lila, which Lila is Joe Russo's or one of the Russo's daughters, which is it's cool that she gets a reoccurring role in the MCU. It's pretty wild.
Are those the same actors?
Yes. That were all the same actors from Endgame.
Okay. Yep. They all the one kid over. Hit puberty and is like massive now.
Yeah. It's been a few years. So that's what happens with kids. You know what I mean?
Now can pause just for clarification. Everybody in Clint's family blipped. Wife, three kids.
Yes.
Everybody disappeared. Everyone. And so he lived 5 years without his family. And then all of a sudden they came back. They were the same age. He aged 5 years.
5 years.
I feel like that is not very clear in the Marvel universe, like how people, like it's still a little clunky. So he lived 5 years without his family. Now they're back, and now they've aged a couple years. So they've been together again for a couple years since the blip, and they seem to be happy.
Should be like a year and a few months. Yeah, it should be a year and a few months. Well, it's hard with middle-aged people, especially famous people, because they don't seem to age ever.
Yeah.
So it's kind of it's kind of hard to show the 5 years, because I mean, like Paul Rudd's 50 years old and he looks like better than he did when he was like in Friends like 20 years ago or whatever, which
sexiest
is crazy
man alive or something, right?
Yeah, he is the sexiest man alive, damn fucking right. But it's you know, like those people don't age until they get to like 70 or something. They're like, oh yeah, okay, they look kind of old. It's just like weird how famous people, you know, it's what happens when you have money, I guess. You have lots of money, you just don't age.
That's it. I try to get on. I feel like they play pretty fast and loose on the blipping and who did when and how long. I feel like they play a little bit fast and loose with that. They ignore it sometimes and then it's like a big plot point at other times. So I try not to pay too much attention, but when I was watching it, I was like, shoot, like he became Ronin because his whole family disappeared. I thought their relationship was fun.
Yeah, I love how we'll get a little bit more into this, but anytime he's with his family or talking to his family, he's genuinely happy. And then when he's having to deal with anything else, he's like, I would rather be doing anything than this. You know what I mean? Well, he's like, I do not want to be doing this. I'm sick of this shit.
You talked about it in the fight in New York City, that he's like really good at what he did. And I, you know, he's walking around with his kids and you forget that he was like a spy and worked for S.H.I.E.L.D. and was in Black Widow. What's the city that they hid in the duct? Budapest. Like, he's done some like gnarly stuff and he's very good at what he does. And even just being like the marksman, I think we constantly say he's just like a normal person, but then at the same time he's very much like very proficient at what he does.
Yeah, he's a trained fucking killer. He's a trained fucking killer. As they get to the hotel, his daughter puts on the news and he sees someone running around in the Ronin costume and he's like, fuck. He's like, fuck. So obviously he goes out to deal with this. Kate, after she saved Lucky, she brings him back to his apartment and then she goes to investigate Armand's place to see, like, to try and get more info on what the fuck's going on, because she kind of is trying to figure out, like, what she has against her mom, what he has against her mom. She sees butterscotch with his name on it, which is fucking weird. I guess it's what rich people do. And then she discovers that he is dead, seemingly by a sword wound. So they're setting it up to, it could be Jack, it could not be Jack, but they're definitely pushing forward that, hey, Jack's a bad guy. Kate doesn't trust him. He probably killed his dad. We'll see. We'll see how that plays out later on. Then she ends up getting confronted by the Tracksuit Mafia again, but Clint is there to save the day, mostly because he's trying to figure out who the fuck is in this costume. So he, and this is another thing we're going to talk about. Like, he's a fucking badass. He takes these motherfuckers out like no problem. Chases down Kate in the Rona costume and then takes it off. And he's like, oh, come on. Because it's like a kid girl in his costume. He's like, what the fuck are you doing? And that's how episode one ends. So before we get into episode two more in depth, what was your overall thoughts on episode one before we dive more into that?
I'm just very happy that they're sticking with the Matt Fraction run. And that's going to be a common theme throughout this entire series, that run of comics is really good and it's funny and it has a ton of heart. And I think it's a really smart move for them to bring him in to be a producer on the show. And just little nuances that if you by chance are annoyed with the Tracksuit Mafia saying bro in the comic, like literally every other word is bro. And it was just it's so perfect how they tied all that together. And so I think it's, I don't know. I'm really excited. I was watching the first episode. It kind of took me a little bit of time to catch kind of the cadence of what the show is going to be like. And I think once we kind of figured out what it was going to look like, I'm like, okay, yeah, this is going to be really fun. I am also not a Christmas fan. I don't like Christmas movies, but I love that they're kind of tying it into like a Die Hard feel, not getting into this Die Hard a Christmas movie argument or not, but having these two characters who are going to get the crap beaten out of them already in the first two episodes. They have bandages, they're hurt, and I think it's just going to keep getting worse. But they're like stubborn heroes who are just going to keep fighting through, which I think is a lot of the Die Hard thing. So I noted some similarities in that, which I thought was pretty cool. And Marvel touching in on Christmas. That's fun. Let's go.
It's very fun. They did an Iron Man 3. I know people have feelings about that movie. I really like that movie, but it's me. I like, mostly everything. But
made better by Shang-Chi and all the tie-ins to that.
Oh, yes. Well, and All Hail the King. If you didn't watch All Hail the King, please watch that. And that leads into what happens in Shang-Chi as well. They reference it. But I do love the Christmas thing, too. I didn't even bring that up. But it's like very Christmas without being over the top of your head Christmas. Like some of the soundtrack is Christmas. And obviously, it's very apparent it's taking place at Christmas time. But it's not overwhelmingly Christmas, if that makes sense. But I very much like that as well. I agree with most of your sentiments too. I was very stoked in the show, especially with being fresh after finishing the whole Matt Fraction run, and I was ready to see where this took us. I've been as soon as they announced Haley Steinfeld as Kate Bishop, I was like, you couldn't have got a more perfect casting than that. So I was very stoked on that, and I think the show is going to be very, very cool. And we'll get into episode two, because episode two kind of ramps up the show a little bit in my opinion. So
one note on that real quick is I think it's important. Yes. I know some people are frustrated that it maybe isn't this like universe changing show, but I think it's really, really important for Marvel to be able to do these like ground level underworld stuff that's more heart and character, and then allow kind of movies or Loki stuff to be really like universe changing. And I think we're gonna have to learn as consumers of these shows that not every single show is gonna be, oh my god, everything changed, like, okay, we just get to spend six episodes with a bunch of characters. And that's maybe we'll get into spoilers at the end, but I think we know there's characters that are going to show up in this that are going to be really exciting to watch.
Yeah, I completely agree. We talked about Liz Flores before we hit record, and you need these. I forget, people keep forgetting like why we fell in love with the MCU in general. You know, they built up to make things special. You need that build up in order for the end games, for the Civil Wars, for the Infinity Wars to be big. You need these smaller stories. And plus, it's giving us a chance to, like, all of these shows have given us such a cool chance to fall more in love with characters who were kind of pushed off to the side or didn't get as much screen time. Mm-hmm. And I love that. It just makes you care about the world even more. You know what I mean? And every show has ushered in so many new characters. You know, like Sylvie and Loki, Mobius and Loki, Kang and Loki, Falcon Winter Soldier brought in U.S. Agent and possibly the new Falcon and Joaquin Torres, and brought back Sharon Carter and Zemo. And, you know, WandaVision brought in a different version of Vision, brought in Monica Rambeau, brought in Sword, to the forefront. Like, these, even though a lot of these shows have been very contained and they gave you exactly what the title said it was going to give you, they have still expanded the universe character wise or with new characters. It's like, hey, here's a bunch of new characters, but then also you're going to get way more layers with the characters you already know. You get to know them even more, which in the future is only going to make these movies bigger when they show up in the movies. Like Captain America 4 is happening. Like, that's going to be a bigger deal because we got the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. You know, it's we need this stuff or else the big stuff isn't going to matter. It's all just going to be the craziest, biggest thing ever, and then nothing's going to matter anymore. You need these things to make that stuff matter. So
my hot take is if we don't get shows like this, the Marvel Universe just becomes the DC Universe where they're trying to jam every single thing into one movie and it falls apart. And I think, like as consumers, we're just going to have to learn that it's going to take a little bit of time and to trust Marvel and their storytelling ability, which at this point, I mean, they really haven't let us down too much. So
no,
let's go.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't agree with you more. I'm glad you brought that up, actually.
Episode two
picks up right where we left off. She fangirls out over Hawkeye again. She's kind of seeing him in this big superhero light and doesn't really see him for everything that's in reality, which it kind of those layers keep peeling back, especially in this episode. They head to Kate's apartment. She makes fun of Lucky as like, wow, what a good guard dog. And he's kind of being like, hey, do you think they would have followed you here? And she's like, no, of course they wouldn't follow me here. And then she brings up that she brought the dog back here before going to Armand's and ending up where she was. And then, of course, the bros are fucking there. And they're throwing Molotov cocktails. I love the shot of Clint breaking the window and catching the Molotov so it wouldn't break over the window and throwing it back. And then Kate exploding one in one of their hands with an arrow. That stuff was really, really cool. Kind of shows off that, like, hey, she is no slouch, which she did show off in that basement fight. Like, you could tell she was struggling because I'm guessing she hasn't been in like a real ass fight. She's only been in like sanctioned competition fights. So she obviously has the skills, but she's never implemented them in real life and to that level. She held her own, but you could tell she was like, fuck, this is hard. It's hard fighting a group of people, especially men, when she's, you know, she's a young woman. She's way smaller than all these people, you know what I mean? So they get out of there. They leave the Ronin suit because there's a fire and they just need to get the fuck out of there. They end up going. It's funny that she brings up, she's like, oh, are you going to go to your safe house? Like, he's like, we need to get supplies. She's like, oh, we're going to get Avenger supplies, but really it's just bandages and Neosporin. And when she brings up, like, hey, is your safe house in Avengers Tower? And he brings up, which I love that he brings it up, it's like, no, Tony sold that a few years ago, which we saw the sale of that, like, being finalized in Spider-Man Homecoming. That's, like, the big crux of the whole show, or the whole movie, is Vulture trying to steal the plane full of all of the Avengers compound stuff. Which
do we know who he sold it to?
No, we do not.
Reed Richards.
It could be Reed Richards. It could be Oscorp.
Yeah.
It could be Wilson Fisk. Like, it could be a lot of people.
I was thinking about it when we were recording, like, a little bit ago, and I was wondering if it's Wilson Fisk. Because in the Spider-Man animated series, he's got this, like, huge tower that he, like, the spider slayers come in and out of and stuff. So, yeah, anyways, it could definitely be.
Yeah, I don't know if we're going to figure out who bought it just yet in this series. Maybe. I guess we'll see. I'm not hoping that it does, but I love that he made that note. It's like, oh no, Tony sold it. Kind of reminding us that, hey, someone's in there and it's not the Avengers. They end
also
up going to...
also I don't he's like, yeah, I don't have resources. I don't have the money to like buy or sell property. I'm like at the whim of Tony Stark. Like
well, and everyone's gone now. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like Spider-Man's obviously still in New York, but they don't really know each other. You know, they don't have a relationship together. Sam's in Louisiana with Bucky.
All intents and purposes, the public believes that Captain America is dead.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Or something. Yeah. They have the theories that he's on the moon or whatever, but
I think
people know that he's not here anymore.
Okay.
Yeah, so he's gone. At this point, Sam would have been the new Captain America or claim that he was the new Captain America, but they're probably in Louisiana, him and Bucky, I would guess. Thor's in space. Captain Marvel's in space. Rhodey's somewhere, but he seems to still be working for the government. So maybe his hands are tied with certain things. But there's not really people around that Clint can exactly call to anymore. That's what it's like. The whole problem in like phase one and phase two of like, oh, why wouldn't these other people show up? They actually have an answer for now because most of them are gone. You know what I mean? Like, because even like us, it's like the final battle in Eternals. It makes sense no one would show up because even if someone heard about it, there's not someone that could get there in a fast enough time to have made a difference. It's not like Sam Wilson's flying there in his jetpack to get there in time. Like by the time he got there, it would have been over. You know what I mean? Like there's no one fast enough to get there and actually make a difference at this point, you know, like
there's, because a lot of people are off, they're off world too. Like,
yes, Thor, like all the people that could, like Thor, Captain gone. Marvel, who could get there, safe. They're gone.
Yeah.
They're not here. So that makes sense. Like that answer that people kind of had a problem with or always had the question of, oh, why didn't this person show up? Like they actually have an answer for it now, which yeah. I love that. I love that they continue to get better with these kind of things. They go to Kate's aunt place and kind of stash out. Clint helps Kate with a bandage to kind of make it heal better. Kind of it's like starts to build that kind of mentor relationship, which I like. It's a very awesome thing from the comics. So I'm so happy we get to see it grow throughout the series. She also uses a frozen pizza to ice pack one of her wounds, which she does in the comics, an actual pizza in one of her mugshots. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of laying low. Clint goes back to the scene of the crime to try and find the suit. He sees that it's gone, but he sees a LARP sticker on one of the trucks. As he's back at the apartment with Kate, he does a little research, finds
suspect
the person who
security,
stole it.
Suspect security, by the way. Suspect security on the police have let him, Clint get in.
Yeah, someone just snatches it. Like, what the fuck, dude? Pretty lame, but whatever. So, yes, he easily finds who has it because someone's bragging about having it on the internet. So he then leaves to go back with his family. In the morning, he sends his family back to Missouri without him. Says, I'll promise I'll be back. Then he goes back with Clint and they have this awesome conversation walking through Times Square where he brings up that he has a hearing aid and she's like, oh, how'd you lose it? And I love that they show clips of just from Avengers 1, from Age of Ultron, from Endgame, of all things that could probably have made a loss of hearing. And he's like, ah, too hard to tell, which makes sense. It makes sense. Dude's been through some shit. That's for damn sure. And then the thing you brought up with Katniss Everdeen, he's like, oh, that one's you. And he's like, no, it's Katniss Everdeen, no. Which I thought was hilarious. you see, like, there's like two Tony Starks, there's a Thor, there's like two Hulks. You know, you see everyone else but Hawkeye. Poor Hawkeye. But we get a Katniss Everdeen. But he takes her to her job, which is her mom's company, Bishop Security.
Can we pause there, though, and talk real quick about that conversation where... Oh, he like says he has nothing to offer and like the whole heart, I think, and maybe one of the big themes of the show is going to be that she's like, you offer inspiration or whatever she says. But I think it's important that people understand that like he is a human fighting these massive battles. And that's something that other humans can like, you know, take inspiration from, which I thought was cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Like she straight up says like, you're my favorite Avenger. And he's like, are you joking? And she's like, no. Like, and I hope she reveals them that he like saved her life. I hope he does kind of reveal that eventually.
Yeah.
I feel like that'd be a really touching moment.
Does anybody actually like Hawkeye though? Like people on Twitter, like maybe jump in here and just like, do we care about Hawkeye in general? Not really.
I did mostly because of Age of Ultron. That's what kind of made me start caring about him. When they had the whole thing with the family and you kind of realize that this one human dude is kind of holding the team together and is the heart of, and like, especially that line he says to Wanda, you know, like, hey, there's flying robots out there. I'm just a dude with a bow and the arrow. But once you walk out of this building, you're an Avenger. And I'm like, yeah, fuck yeah. And obviously his haircut in Endgame was lame, but whatever. He was a dope ass assassin. So who cares? I mean,
I'm okay with it.
I wouldn't say. And like the moment with him and Nat and Vormir was, whew, I did not see that one coming. I would have never guessed that in my wildest dreams that a scene like that would happen in that movie. And when it happened, I was like, whoa. Okay.
You know the whole you know the whole shtick of Harrison Ford that he like doesn't let people dress him like any movie. He's just wearing like the same pants and shirt. I feel like Jeremy Renner showed up to shoot his scenes in Endgame and he just had that haircut and they're like Oh,
whatever.
We actually had something else in mind for you. And he was like, no, this is it.
That would be really funny. I would kind of like that more.
Yeah, I don't care. You guys could shoot these scenes if you want them or not. Add CGI hair if you need to.
Oh my God. But we see Kate have a conversation with her mom. Jack's there. There's this obvious tension between her and Jack. And as this is happening, Clint goes to this LARP event, which he's begrudgingly signing up for, which was hilarious. But he's just like, you know what? I'll do it. Whatever. And then there's this awesome sequence of him taking out all these LARPers. He eventually, I love this sequence. I thought it was so much fun of him just like taking out these motherfuckers. Like it's no big deal. And it's funny because, you know, it's like toy plastic swords and stuff. It's hilarious. And then he meets up with the dude that took his suit. And he's just like, hey, man, like, I don't care. I'll give you the suit. Just let me kill you. It'll be so cool for me. Because he's like, oh, you're Hawkeye. He recognized him, just like you said. He's like, oh, you're Hawkeye. He's like, dude, just come on. And he's like, okay, whatever. I don't care. And he's even just like, just do it. And he's like, nah, dude, we got to make it believable. So they have this awesome scene. He's making sword noises every time they hit. He's like, shing, shing, shing. What I thought was amazing. He eventually takes them out. And then they have this awesome scene after where he gives back the suit and everything. He's like, oh, dude, thank you so much. Seriously, that was so cool. And then he eventually goes, he's like, hey, you had fun, didn't you? And he goes, I'm glad I did it, which was a nice moment, because like you said, he's been kind of very annoyed and begrudgingly like, oh, I have to do all this stuff. Like, dude's been through a lot. It's kind of understandable. He's very, doesn't want to do this, especially because the whole thing is he wants to be with his family. Like, he didn't have his family for 5 years. Of course, he's going to be annoyed that he has to do all this stuff. He just wants to spend time with his family. That's all he wants. But he has to clean up this mess that he kind of created himself in ways. But then the dude also said, like, he is super stoked that he's like, oh, call me Clint. But this guy's name is Grills, which Grills was a very important character in the Matt Fraction run. He was the dude who lived in the building that Clint lived in and bought. Bad news for him is he ends up dying in the series. I don't know if this dude will come back. I don't really see him dying, but maybe he'll tie in, since he kind of had that moment of him opening up and be like, hey, I'm glad I did this. But Grills... This is another hope I have for the series, is Grills always called him Hawk Guy. And I hope someone calls him Hawk Guy. Since this dude has kind of respect for him, I don't think so, especially when he's like, hey, call me Clint. I don't think he would do that and kind of disrespect him in that way. It was more of like a playful thing that was really funny in the comics, but I really do hope someone calls him Hawk Guy. I really, really want that. Same with like the Lucky scene.
Two things I want to hit on is one, going back a little bit to Kate and her relationship with Jack, I thought it was really, like, he was being very rude to her.
Yes. He's, like, purposely prodding, yeah.
Yeah, and I wasn't super comfortable with, like, the mom allowing that, but there's something to that relationship where, like, I think they'll dive into it, where there's some competitiveness or something where she's, like, very much allowing Kate to be rude to Jack and Jack. Like, it's that whole stepdaughter stepfather relationship
see
in movies and stuff, and I thought that was a cool line when he was like, I bought a book on being a stepfather. But I don't know, I was like a little uncomfortable with like how rude they're being to each other, because I'm like, real humans like wouldn't act like that right off the bat. But maybe, I don't know, who knows. And then two, the whole LARPing sequence, and I think that's why I love how they treat these shows. One, I thought it was interesting that they didn't have the opening credits in the second episode. They just did that with first one, where it was kind of the epilogue of how Kate got to that point, which then makes me kind of wonder, are they treating this like just one continuous story? And if you were to go back and watch, you just see the opening credits once and then kind of watch your way through. And maybe the third episode will have opening credits, but just having that space and the time to sink into these characters, that LARPing sequence just doesn't exist in a movie. And I thought it was just really funny, because obviously he's an exceptional swordsman. And so these guys who are LARPing are just going to get completely wrecked by him. And he's like not even trying.
He's just like taking them out with ease.
Yeah. And I just thought that was like a really smart, fun scene. And that's what I was talking about earlier, of kind of the nuance and the cadence of the show. And you can get stuff like that where it's Jeremy Renner just kind of having fun in the role. I thought it was smart.
Oh yeah, I love that stuff so much. I love that we're getting him to just like kind of embrace being the character and have so much mm-hmm. fun with it. Like I said, this show is like really funny. It's very, very funny. It obviously has a very serious overtone added to it, with which I like. That's what I've liked more about the MCU now, that especially Phase 4. It's had some really cool, funny, awesome action moments, but they really have been diving deep into like trauma and very mm-hmm. serious issues, which I've loved that they're adding that layer on top of it, which I feel like is needed for it to evolve and for it to keep going. Like that stuff is needed to keep stuff more interesting and keep it going.
Can I know on the gross thing, are we spoiling future episodes?
We can speculate.
Okay. Yeah, Yelena is yeah. coming up soon. And so my thought, which is very much in the IMDb credits, so that's not really even considered a spoiler. I don't know.
Well, I mean, and if you've seen Black Widow, the whole end credit scene
yeah.
sets up for it. It's not a spoiler to say, hey, Yelena's probably going to show up. Like, it's very implied that she's going to show up.
Yeah, she's showing up at the show.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it's happening. Know, yeah. Like, there's still a lot of narrative that they're going to have to cover if a character like her and Echo, like, there's a lot of stuff. So I think the grill stuff might just be them nodding at the comic book. They're really going to dive into it too much. Because then at that point, I start to get nervous. Like, are they trying to do too much in 6 episodes? Because we only yeah. have 4 more episodes to cover
yeah.
a lot of ground. So we'll see.
Yeah.
I'm stoked, obviously.
Yeah.
But the grill thing, I think that's a nod to the character in the comics. And I think that we kind of diverge from there.
Yeah. There's another comic nod when Kate is at the office. She gets a phone call and it's from Detective, I think it's Claude or something like that, but he is also a detective in the comics that she deals with when she goes out to the West Coast, and she annoys him in a very different way. She tries to become a private investigator to make money, and she like kind of annoys him, but she actually ends up solving this big case for him at the end. But this is more of him. Maybe I don't think he'll play a bigger role. I think it's just another thing like grills. It's just like a nice little nod to be like, oh yeah, here, if you've read it, here's a reward for you. Like, oh, hey, they mentioned that name. That's cool. Which yep. they do a lot. They do a ton in the MCU. And he's really calling about the fire in her apartment building, which her mom does bring up too. She's like, hey, there was a fire, and it's, you know, it is very interesting that she knows kind of everything that's going on. Again, she drops subtle hints of like warning her to like not get involved with things, even though she kind of does. And to add a little bit more to what you're talking about, how Clint is very open with his wife Laura, he stashes the suit off in a gym locker, and he's calling her, telling her, you know, we talked about this a little bit earlier, about, you know, kind of laying out what we're doing. And he brings up that he's going to do like the where they let him catch her, which he's like, oh, that was Natasha's signature move mm-hmm. or whatever, which is a nice touch, adding more to that relationship. Like you said, she knows, she's fully in tune with what's going on, which I really, really like. Then we get to dinner at the Bishop household, which is another heated situation with them. You know, she brings up like, oh yeah, we had to spar with really shitty equipment. So he's like, I know when someone's trying to stab me in the back. And they have a little fencing competition, which I liked this a lot. It was very fun. He seemingly was letting her win. And then she comes at him, and then he flicks it away like with ease, being like, hey, like obviously like he's hiding something. Like, he's very
I like
good
how mad
stuff.
She got. She was getting so mad.
So mad. She was like, fight me, motherfucker. You know? Yeah. And again, Eleanor just kind of in the background, letting it go down, mm-hmm. not fazed by any of it, you know, especially when he easily like just like unarms her, like with basically no hesitation or effort at all. Just like, that, see ya. Again, and then even when she's like, hey, please apologize to him, and she says something like, oh, I'm sorry that I made him tell the truth or something like that.
Yeah,
which I thought was
yeah,
really, really funny
line.
And in character. And then he offers the Armand the Third butterscotch. Like, they're obviously pushing that, like, oh, he's the bad guy, but it's kind of like an almost obvious bait and switch that Eleanor is going to be the actual bad guy. You know, we'll see. We'll see where it goes. I'm interested to see where it goes. Again, this is kind of the big mystery of like, what's really going on there, more than anything. That's like, that's, you know, like that's kind of the big thing. And then Clint kind of baits in the Tri-Suit Mafia, gets captured. I love the line when they put the bag over his head. He's like, guys, I can see through the bag.
Amazing. Yeah.
Incredible, incredible line. Is there anything you want to add about the dinner before we move into this kind of final sequence?
No, I thought that that was a... I'm trying not to get too... I get so overwhelmed by trying to solve the mystery sometimes. It's like, instead, I think I try to sit back and let the show tell me what it wants to tell me.
Yeah.
And I thought that that scene was really fun. It like, other than them just being extremely rude to each other, which just stresses me out. So I'm like, come on, try to be at least a little bit nice. But
yeah, they don't even hide it.
No. I thought the sparring scene was fun because it showed like mutual respect where Jack could obviously tell that Kate knows what she's doing, but then he wasn't fully engaging and she was pissed because she knew he was holding back. And so I thought that was an interesting relationship. I wasn't really picking up on the Eleanor piece that she may have be involved in Armand's murder. But that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. And I think I'm wondering if the Tracksuit Mafia guys are kind of the red herring of the show, where they're, I think they may end up kind of going away after like maybe the next episode. I know there's a scene where she blows up a van. Kate blows up a van and it says like bro on the side or something. And
yeah,
the
trust a bro. Yeah.
Yeah. But I have a feeling like it'll escalate higher than that pretty soon. Cause it's obvious that these guys are idiots and I love it.
Yes. Yeah.
They're tying up to like the kids. They're talking about how hard it is to find like empty warehouses and stuff. Like, dude. I love that stuff.
Clinton's captured and he's in there and he's like, nice place you got here. And he's like defending of why it's not as nice as it should be, which is like ridiculous. And I love how he's just like out of the restraints and they're like, I'll bring the guns. And the whole back and forth of like Kate Bishop is guy, and he's like, no, Kate Bishop is not a guy. And like, it's just hilarious. Kate Bishop ends up come crashing down.
Yeah.
I love the line, oh, I didn't know we were supposed to bring guns.
Side note, the security system stuff that she can like track people's phones easily. Which the first time she busted out, I was like, how did she do that? But then she like logs into the system.
The Bishop security. And, yeah.
Yeah. Which I thought was a cool little, like the first time it was subtle, but then it was like, oh, okay. She has access to this network that her mom has built, which that'll like a Chekhov's gun. Like that'll play into things later.
Yeah, that's how she finds Clint is through the app and is using his phone number, because she does make that call and then she realizes that it's not Clint on the other line, it is someone else.
And we've all done that where we put somebody else's phone number and called through to make sure that they get it.
Yes.
Clutch move, man. You got to call the phone so you have it too.
It's a good move. I do love when she falls through and they're like, oh, I found her, bro.
I think we get so focused on like these criminal masterminds and the villains in these shows being like super smart and having like every move planned out. So I thought it was refreshing to have just a bunch of idiots, and that ties into the comic run too, where they're idiots. They don't know what they're doing, but
they're so dumb.
Disposable.
Yeah. They're just they're literally numbers. That's the reason why they're so dangerous, because there's so many of them. They win by numbers, not by quality. It's very quantity over quality rather than anything else. And I do think, tying back to the Yelena thing you brought up, I think she's going to come out of nowhere too. Like we're going to kind of like, obviously it's kind of everyone in the back of their heads, but when we're watching it, you're kind of not thinking of when she's going to show up. And I think she's going to show up and everyone's gonna be like, oh fuck. Like, fuck.
Well, on
like,
that note, I bet she's already there. Like, she's probably already watching somehow. Like,
yeah, you're probably right. She is a trained spy.
Yep.
She is.
We got a lot of those.
Yeah.
Knows she's there too. Like,
I mean, he's good. Like we said, he knows what the fuck's going on. Then they're both tied up, and then one of the Tracksuit Mafia guys goes to talk to Maya Lopez, aka Echo, which I'm sure we're gonna learn a lot more about in this third episode. And so in the comics, she's basically adopted by Kingpin and is very tied with Kingpin. Another Kingpin nod here. Also, there was a line when Clint was talking to his wife and he says, I don't know how high up this goes. Because obviously he's very in tune with the criminal underworld. He spent 5 years eradicating a lot of it. And that's kind of another, like, another allusion to possibly Kingpin being involved in this. She can, she has like photographic memory, but can totally redo anything. Like in the comics, she's like a master piano player because she can just watch. She's also deaf. That, and they kind of illustrate that with her like feeling the speakers, and they do the whole thing with him like kind of trying to mouth it very obviously and use hand signals to kind of illustrate what he's trying to say.
Marvel doesn't dabble in like the hip hop culture too often, which they did a little bit in Shang-Chi, but mostly in Black Panther with like the score and stuff. So when the soundtrack kind of kicks in towards the end of the episode, that's I was like when they kind of change stuff up, and it was like a real like kind of EDM like heavy beat, and I thought that was cool that she was touching the speakers and all that kind of stuff.
feeling the beat. So I think that's maybe why they changed Taskmaster's abilities up a little bit, so maybe it wasn't exactly the same as what Echo does, possibly. I could be wrong. So we'll see how she plays in. Obviously, she's getting her own solo series after this sometime.
What is that going to be about?
I think it's going to be just like a kind of a sequel to this series, but I think it's going to heavily involve Daredevil. I think it's going to be
the big thing
that Daredevil's involved in.
I'm just ready for us to
move. I could be wrong.
Like, obviously, he's like Daredevil's coming in. Kingpin's coming in. It's like, let's go.
Yeah, from what I've seen and read, he's going to be in a number of projects, Echo being one of them. So
okay, dope. Okay.
We'll see.
Super, super.
We'll see. That's why I think people are like, Echo, we already know what Echo is. Why is she getting a series? I think it's gonna be very like Echo and Daredevil will be the main characters kind of thing, which will be very, very dope. It is like in her in the red lighting, very Daredevil.
Yeah.
Very Netflix Daredevil, if I have to say, you know. So we'll see if Kingpin comes in the series. I mean, they're kind of like kanging this, where they're doing a lot of like nods that would make sense if Kingpin showed up, just like what they did with Kang and He Remains and Loki. So we'll see how it goes, but it ends with her looking at the camera. Like I said, obviously episode 3 is going to pick up right where they left off. I think we'll get to know a little bit more about Echo, kind of see what else is going to happen. I'm very interested to see where this goes. Like I really have no idea where it's going. And I'm very excited to see how it progresses.
I think you just pointed out a flaw in my watching history, is I need to go finish Daredevil on Netflix. Is it still there? Where do I watch these shows?
Oh yeah, Netflix still owns it. They just don't own the rights to the characters anymore because they like pretty much leased the rights to all those characters. But yes, go.
Because I tapped out. I didn't watch the Defenders. Wait, what was third season of Daredevil?
Bullseye. And Kingpin. It's very good.
Who was Bullseye? What the?
Which just one? Some dude.
Oh, I did watch that.
I don't know.
Which one's Punisher was season 2?
Season 2, yep.
Anyways, there's too much to watch. I didn't watch Defenders. So I'm like trying to figure out where we left Kingpin. Because then like Echo, if she was some sort of like adopted daughter of Kingpin or something, if she have a vendetta? Anyway, that's a different show. We're getting into a different show. Let's go back to Hawkeye.
Yeah. And I don't know if they're going to kind of like continue. They might just kind of be like, oh, those things happened. Because I don't think they can actually reference the things that happened in those shows because they don't own it. But I think they can kind of just continue. I think they can just kind of continue them on and just like have that be headcanon. But for people who haven't seen it, it's fine. And people who have seen it, it's not going to affect either way. I think that's probably the best way to handle it rather than be like, oh, multiverse or, oh, you know, I feel like that'd be the cleanest way to kind of just bring them in and start from scratch, but not erasing anything that's happened. You know what I mean? Because it ends with Kingpin going to jail, which I mean, Kingpin gets out of jail a billion fucking times over. So that's not like a hard thing to do is get him out of jail. You know, you know what I mean? And he's usually still running shit from jail. So it's, you know,
that's the thing I don't want to get into. I want to assume that the shows that we're watching are set in the same universe. Like, I think that they need to be clear. Not that Marvel needs to be clear on what that is, but I have to assume that we're in the main universe that we've been in, because I know we got into that a little bit with different, like, Loki with WandaVision stuff of like, oh, is this set in a different universe? I don't think that they can do that just for the casual fan, because man, that just gets so so convoluted so quickly. I just don't think that they can. So
I don't think they will either. I think they're kind of playing with things like they did with Loki, which obviously it kind of took place out of time and space, not really in a universe. And then obviously they're going to play, it's going to play into Spider-Man No Way Home, but it seems like they're spelling it out pretty well. At least even in the trailer, they're like, hey, people from different universes are coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if, even if you're a casual, you know about these movies. It's not like there were small movies. There were all massive fucking movies. You know what I mean? A lot of us grew up on them, you know?
My wife liked that. We watched the Tobey Maguire ones back in the day, and she just doesn't care about Marvel stuff anymore. And so the trailer came out, and I was like freaking out about it. And I was like, Kai, look at this. The Doc Ock from this movie, that's a separate universe, is showing up in this one. And she was like, I have no idea what you're talking about, but that seems cool and you're excited about it. Like, because I think like casual fans like don't even really know different studios and lawsuits and rights issues and stuff. And they're like, oh, cool. Like Green Goblin is in a movie again.
Yeah, that's mostly the thing. They're like, oh, he's gonna be another movie, sick. And then they'll do a good job of explaining
it. That Sony bought the rights to this character so that Marvel couldn't actually use this character because of copyright lawsuits and all this kind of stuff, but now they're playing well in the sandbox.
Yeah. And for us, we're like, holy fuck. And the other people are like, oh, cool, they're showing up again. Yeah. They don't know why or how. They're just like, cool, you know, which is fine.
Exactly. Yeah.
We live in a bubble. It's
I love our bubble. It's apparent. It's the best.
Oh, me too. It's a great bubble. Is there anything you want to add before we get out of here for this week?
No, I'm really excited about this show. I think it's going to be really fun. And holy cow, I'm just stoked. The next, like, what, 6 weeks, 4 weeks of
4 weeks,
Hawkeye, Spider-Man, Boba Fett. Like, we're setting up for a really cool end of the year run. And that's very exciting.
Oh, yeah. I am very, very excited too. I'm sure we'll talk about Spider-Man No Way Home, non-spoilery. We'll talk about probably in the finale episode. We'll have a lot to talk about that day.
And I probably can guarantee that we won't go on an hour and a half. We had to cover two episodes this time. So
So there's a lot to cover in this one. So the next episode should be a bit shorter.
Final note, I'm just very proud of Jeremy Renner. He was supposed to be the next like Mission Impossible guy, and then Tom Cruise came back. He was supposed to be the next Bourne guy, and Matt Damon came back. Give Jeremy Renner his time, and he's got the hell show, the King's whatever show on Paramount or whatever. Like he's got a moment right now, and let's just let him enjoy that.
I'm excited. We'll by the end we'll have a clearer picture of what Clint Barton's Hawkeye is going to do in the MCU. And I'm excited to have that conversation because I don't want to speculate because I have no idea how this is going to end. And I just I want to see where it takes us. But by the end, we'll have a clearer picture to see if he's kind of sailing off into the sunset or he's going to come back. We'll see.
Yeah. But on that note, Thanos was right. So
there is that's the most perfect way to sign off. But until next week, see you later, nerds.